Our second speaker today is Bill Simons. Bill Simons directs the Pathways to Prosperity Project, which is based at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. The Pathways Project released a major report in February of this year about how states and the nation can better prepare young people for the jobs of the 21st century. Since February, Mr. Simons has spoken on this report in about half of the states and is following up on next steps with several of them. Mr. Simons helped create the Pathways Project while he was a senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government in 2007 and 8. Prior to that time, he spent nearly 25 years as a senior correspondent and bureau chief for Business Week magazine. He covered business in the U.S. and abroad and led bureaus in Boston, Denver, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Rome. He also served as Business Week's chief education correspondent for many years. Despite all his national and international experience, Bill has Midwest roots as well. His parents lived in Wisconsin, and his first job was in Iowa. Bill has ties to one other major event occurring in Wisconsin this week other than this seminar, baseball's National League Championship Series. Bill was one of the first national correspondents to write a profile of Bud Selig when he was the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers. His topic is Pathways to Prosperity, Preparing Workers for the Jobs of the 21st Century.
Well, thank you and good morning. Let me tell you, I live in the Boston area right now, and I was there in 2004 when the Red Sox overcame the curse and won the World Championship for the first time in 86 years. So those of you who are discouraged by last night's game, we were down 0-3 against the Yankees in the American League Championship Series, and I don't think there was a single sports commentator who thought the Red Sox had a prayer of coming back, but of course they won four straight and then went on to win the World Series. So I wouldn't give up on the Brewers yet. Anyhow, it's a pleasure to be with you. I have spent a lot of time in Wisconsin. My parents lived for almost 25 years in the Waukesha area. My mother worked at UWM. So I feel like Wisconsin in many ways is sort of a second home. And I also think that you're really fortunate to have manpower based in this state. You know, when I was covering business around the world for Business Week, I always looked at manpower as really the company that had the best understanding of what's really going on in the labor market. I wrote a lot of stories about how is the economy doing? Are we coming out of a recession? Are we going into a recession? Manpower always had the best feel for what was really going on with employment. So it's an incredible resource. And as you work to improve education and workforce development here in Wisconsin, I would really encourage you to work with Manpower because they really know what they're talking about. The other point I'd like to make is just to tie what Jonas said to what I'm going to say is the connection between education on the one hand and employment on the other. And there really is a close connection. There was a book written a couple of years ago called The Race Between Education and Technology by a couple of Harvard economists, and they looked at sort of the history of education, what impact that has had on economic growth. And they concluded that education, particularly educational achievement and attainment, is the single most important explanation of why the U.S. grew so much during the 20th century. And to put that in perspective, between 1900 and 1999, average per capita income in the U.S., adjusted for inflation, increased 5 to 6-fold. So what that means is the average family in Wisconsin had 5 to 6 times as much spending power in 1999 as they did in 1900. It was an explosive growth in prosperity. Now, in the last 10 years, we've actually seen that drop. There's actually been a drop in per capita income in the U.S. And I know if you're listening to the Republican presidential debates, there's a lot of talk about, you know, should we put tax on people making over $250,000 a year, over $1 million a year? The reality is per capita income in the U.S. right now, family income is under $50,000 a year. And that's been dropping. The average person is worse off today than they were 10 years ago. And I think that the problems with our education system go right to the core of this. That's what I'm going to be talking about today. So, as was said, we released this report back in February. This is what it looks like, Pathways to Prosperity. And at that point, we had no idea what kind of reaction we were going to get. The interest has really been overwhelming. Since February, I've now gotten speaking invitations from more than half the states. In the last 3 weeks, I've been in 7 states. It really is taking off, and also a number of foreign countries. I was able to go to New Zealand this summer and talk to them, and they're very committed to addressing the kinds of issues that Jonas was describing. So you might be asking yourself, why is there so much interest in this report? And I think that's twofold. Number one, I think that there's a growing recognition that our existing approach to school reform really has not gotten the job done. Many of you remember No Child Left Behind. It was passed about 10 years ago. And when that was passed, President Bush said by 2014, every child in America is going to be proficient in reading and math. And what he meant was they're going to be at grade level. Well, a few weeks ago, President Obama said, in fact, he thought 80% of the schools were going to fail to meet that goal. And now they're talking about giving waivers to states on No Child Left Behind, et cetera. So that law was passed. It really didn't accomplish what it set out to do. And there have been many other examples of our failure to reach those goals. So that's one factor. I think the second factor, though, is what's going on in the economy right here in Wisconsin and around the country, which is the tremendous increase in unemployment, which has really hit those under the age of 25 far harder than those over 25. So teen employment right now is at the highest level since the Great, is at the lowest level since the Great Depression. In other words, teenage unemployment is at the highest level since the Depression. And many young people aged 20 to 24 are really struggling to find work. And I'm sure many of you know, young people who are in these categories really having a hard time finding a job. I think what that's done is change, at least at the grassroots level, change people's perception of what education is all about, what we need to be thinking about. Increasingly, they're asking the question, if I go to this school or get this degree, is it going to lead to a job? Or is it just going to lead to maybe getting a BA and working at Starbucks or something? So I think that question has really come front and center in the minds of the public. That was brought home to me here in Wisconsin. I was on an hour-long show on Wisconsin Public Radio. And the calls came in from all over the state, most of them just from ordinary people. We're not talking about policymakers or professors or something like that. These were ordinary people really expressing their concern, how can we fix our schools so they're going to do a better job preparing kids to succeed in the workforce? So let me give you a quick overview of what we want to talk about today. I want to give you a quick overview of our study that we did, and then talk about what it might mean for Wisconsin as you think about how you can advance your education system here in this state. And we want to talk about the challenge facing the U.S. In terms of preparing our young people, how the labor market is shifting and what that means for education, what we can learn from other countries, because as Jonas said, this is a global phenomenon, and then our recommendations for addressing this in the U.S. and what it means for Wisconsin. So let's start out with what we call the Pathways Challenge. And the reason we launched this study 3 years ago was we were convinced that we're increasingly failing to prepare our young people to succeed as adults. Now, there's many aspects to success. We think appreciation of the arts, obviously, is important. Becoming a good citizen is important. But our study is really primarily focused on, are we preparing students to succeed in the world of work? Are they going to find a career? Are they going to be able to succeed in that career? And that's a central part of our adult life, obviously. And unfortunately, there's increasing signs that we're failing to meet that fundamental challenge of our school system. One is in terms of education. For over 100 years, the U.S. led the world in education. And that book I mentioned sketches this out really well. They pointed out at the time of the Civil War, we were already number one. Why? Because in places like Wisconsin, we believed in a universal approach to grammar school education. Every kid should get a grammar school education. Then at the turn of the last century, we recognized that a new type of job was emerging, 20th century jobs. And to train young people for those, we needed high schools. So that led to the high school movement. And all across Wisconsin and across the country, high schools were created. Those were created by local leaders. It was not a mandate from the president. It wasn't an act of Congress. It was actually leaders around, in communities like Milwaukee and Madison deciding, we need high schools to train our young people for the jobs that are emerging now. And so in the course of one generation, high school went from something that very few young people had to the norm in the U.S. Then, after World War II, there was an explosion in post-secondary education. And you certainly saw that in Wisconsin, a tremendous growth in the number of post-secondary institutions and a lot of increase in students going there. So again, we led the world in that. So from the Civil War up to the 1970s, we were number one by virtually every measure. And again, that really contributed to the economic growth and prosperity of the U.S. In the last generation, we've lost that leadership. We're no longer in the top 10 in high school graduation. We're not a leader in college graduation. We are number one in one category, which is producing high school, which is producing dropouts. The second factor is that we think that if you're going to become a successful adult, getting work experience is actually something you really need. And unfortunately, right now, our teens and young adults are really struggling to get that fundamental work experience. That could have a negative impact on the rest of their life if they can't get that experience. And thirdly, the transition to adulthood has changed dramatically. You know, back in 1960, the average young man, and back then the workforce was dominated by males, came out of high school and got a job pretty quickly. Here in Wisconsin, many of them went into the manufacturing industry. The average young woman, believe it or not, back then was married by the time she was 21 and a mother by the time she was 23. So by the time they were 25, those young adults were already full-fledged adults. Today, obviously, that's no longer the case. Today's 30-year-olds are less than half as likely to achieve all those markers of becoming full-fledged adults, having a job, getting married, and having a family. So the transition is lengthened out a lot. The bottom line, though, is that we're literally leaving millions of our young people behind. They're not prepared to succeed in the 21st century. What I'm going to be talking about today is how we can address that challenge in a more effective way. So let's start out by looking at the labor market. I'm just going to touch on this briefly. We heard from one of the world's experts already on what's going on in the labor market. But the key fact, as far as it relates to education, is that back in the early 70s, you could say, really, if you had a high school degree, you had the passport to the American dream. About 3 out of 4 workers had no more than a high school degree, but most of them were members of the middle class. And there were lots of great examples of that here in Wisconsin. Now, we've seen a big shift. Some kind of post-secondary credential has really become the new passport for the American dream. And Georgetown put out a study last year, which really illustrated this. They pointed out that between 1973 and 2007, we created 63 million jobs. But over the same period of time, the number of jobs open to those with a high school degree fell by 2 million. This is really absolutely a titanic shift in the nature of the labor market. The result is that workers with a high school education or less now only make up about 41% of the workforce, down from almost 3 out of 4 in the early 70s. So you can see if you've got only a high school degree or less, you're in much worse shape now than you were just a few years ago. Now, virtually every economist thinks that this trend is going to continue. And Georgetown predicts that in the current decade, about almost 2 out of 3 jobs are going to require some post-secondary credential. That's up from 59% at present. And that means we're going to have to produce a lot more degrees. But I think there's been a widespread misunderstanding about how much education you need to succeed in the labor force. And Jonas talked about this. And this is more true in Wisconsin than it is in some states. The dark red there shows jobs that require a 4-year degree or higher. That's only a third of the jobs in the American economy. If you go into affluent suburbs, and I've been in a number of them recently, like Palo Alto, which is right across from Stanford, 100% of the parents there would think that you need a 4-year degree to succeed in America. The reality, though, is this. A third of the jobs require a 4-year degree or higher. We're talking about the skills you actually need for the job. Now, Starbucks, for example, the Starbucks I go to, everybody working in there has at least a 4-year degree. Some of them have master's degrees. You don't actually need that education, though, to work at Starbucks. Now, the orange slice of the pie, the 30%, those are jobs that require education beyond high school. We're talking about community colleges, technical colleges here in Wisconsin, but less than a 4-year degree. These are the so-called middle skills jobs. These are particularly important to the Wisconsin economy. But as a society, we've really overlooked that form of education. And many of our kids have gotten the message the only way to prosper is to get a 4-year degree. What I'm telling you is that's simply inaccurate. That's not what is going on in the real world. We need to spend a lot more time focusing on that 30%, which is almost as large as the 33%. And by the way, many of these jobs are very well paid. I say well paid, not in the sense that you're going to make $200,000 a year, but well paid in that you're going to make a lot more than what the average American is making. You're going to get a foothold on the middle class. And finally, the 36% at the top, those are jobs that require a high school degree or less. The problem is those are increasingly poorly paid and often don't offer benefits. So the question is, What should our goal be? And, what we're arguing in our study is we need to rethink our education goals. Gene Bottoms, who heads a program called High Schools at Work, has said that we Americans think there's only one road to heaven. And the road to heaven is take your college prep curriculum in high school, take your ACT, your SAT, and then go to the University of Wisconsin, Beloit, Marquette, or a school like that, and get your four-year degree. Okay. The problem with that definition is that right now, in 2011, only 30% of our young people are actually getting to heaven. It means that 70% aren't getting there, and I'll leave it up to your theology to tell me where they are. The point is, though, that if that's what we're holding out as the definition of success, many of our young people are getting the idea that they aren't cutting it, that they're not on the track to success, that maybe their future isn't that bright. And if they're getting that message, it's really going to limit their future. What we're suggesting is there's alternative pathways to success, and we really need to open those up. What do those mean? That includes technical colleges, community colleges. We need to expand apprenticeship opportunities. The military, quite frankly, is doing a good job at providing career education as well. So we need to open up these alternative pathways and move away from the idea that the only way to get there is going to a four-year college. So how are we doing at equipping our young people with the education they need? And as Jonas said, the news here is really bad. It's very troubling. It's something that all of the members of the legislature should be deeply concerned about. You know, we've spent billions of dollars and worked for years to raise the high school graduation rate, but it's been pretty flat. Every year, 1 million students drop out of high school in the U.S. What are their prospects? In 2011, their prospects are really dim. They are very well represented in our prison population. Many of our prisoners are high school dropouts, but they don't have a good prospect in the labor force at all. Now, when it goes to college, the news here is equally disturbing. We send a lot of students to college, but many of them never get a degree. As a matter of fact, at four-year colleges, in 6 years, only 56% of the students get a degree. And at our community colleges, only 29% get a degree in 3 years. So again, we're sending a lot of people to college. Many of them drop out. What they end up with is not a degree that's going to help them, but they often do end up with a lot of student debt. So the bottom line is that by the time they're 27, only 40% of our young people actually have either an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. And I said before, only 30% have a four-year degree. So the other side to this is, are our youth career ready? Now, I won't spend a lot of time on this. Jonas talked about it quite a bit. The bottom line, though, is that our employers are saying increasingly the graduates of our institutions are not really ready for the workforce. This is particularly true of high school graduates. And again, this chart shows that there's been a dramatic drop in youth employment. In June 2000, more than one out of two teenagers in the U.S. was employed in the summer. By last summer, it was down to only 29%. So many of our young people are not getting the opportunity to work, and that's a really serious problem. And the final issue is that there's a growing gender gap in our colleges and universities. 57% of our students now at our colleges and universities are women, only 43% are men. What that suggests is we're failing to engage our young men. So the question we asked is, why are we failing to prepare so many youth? And our conclusion is our focus has been too narrow. We focused on this one road to heaven idea that an academic approach to education is the only way to get there. It hasn't been working. We have decades of evidence that it's not working. And our conclusion is we need a broader, more holistic system of pathways to prosperity. Now, in our study, we took a look at what other countries are doing in preparing their young people. The key message here is that they are not so focused on just an academic approach to education. They have recognized the importance of vocational education. And this chart shows what's happening. This is maybe hard to see from where you're sitting. It shows what's going on in Central and Northern Europe, in countries like Germany, Switzerland, Finland. And Jonas, by the way, is from Sweden. What it shows is that in these countries, 40% or more of high school students are actually involved in vocational education. In other words, they're not sitting in class all day. As a matter of fact, many of these countries have what they call the dual apprenticeship model, where students are going out of the school as many as 3 days a week to work as apprentices in industry, learning on the job. And the success rate for that is phenomenally high. As a matter of fact, Germany has a very low youth unemployment rate, less than 10%. So the OECD did a major study on this last year, looking at vocational education across 17 countries, and they reached some fundamental conclusions. The first is, pedagogically, If you approach education in this way, you make it more real world, you connect work and learning, most young people are going to learn more. If they sit in classroom, and we've seen repeated evidence of this, you know, we have rigorous standards, but the nation's report card came out recently and said only 12% of our students are proficient in history. That doesn't mean the textbook wasn't rigorous. It means the kids aren't getting anything out of the class. I mean, they might be sitting there, they're not engaged, they're not learning. What they're saying is this approach to education is more effective. They also said that this approach leads to higher attainment. You're going to have more degrees. And not surprisingly, it also makes it easier for them to find jobs. So our conclusion is that if we're going to solve this problem, we need to rethink our approach to education. And it can start right here in Wisconsin. We need to do three things. First of all, we have to offer a better set of pathways for our young people, not just one approach. Some students will do very well with an academic approach, come here to the University of Wisconsin, maybe go on to law school. That's fine for them, but it's not working for everybody. So we need a wider range of pathways. Secondly, we need to work more closely with the business community. That's why it's so important that you have manpower here. And thirdly, we're calling for what we call a new social compact. Now, this is not a call for socialism. It's a very simple idea. Let's bring together the educators, the business community, government leaders, and talk about who are we leaving behind. What can we do to better prepare those kids? So if we look at the multiple pathways in a bit more detail, we're suggesting there's several things we need to do. First, we need to elevate career education to world-class levels. We already have some great programs. We need to expand them. We need to expand career counseling. And this is something that is an urgent priority in Wisconsin. Today, the average ratio of high school students to counselors is 500 to 1. At the end of the day, very few students in Wisconsin are getting any meaningful career counseling. They're going through high school, but they aren't really thinking about the core issue, what am I going to do with my life? And by the way, you all know that Steve Jobs died last week, and he was actually, his mother was here at the University of Wisconsin when she became pregnant and decided to give him up for adoption. He gave a graduation speech back in 2005 at Stanford. And I'd highly encourage all of you to go on and watch that. It's one of the most inspiring speeches you're going to hear. What he told those graduates is, the most important question you need to ask is, what are you going to do with your life? What is your passion? You have to find your passion. Why are you here? What is your purpose? And until you answer that question, you might just be treading water. You might be in the wrong job. We really need to focus a lot more on this. This is really a core issue. We've overlooked it in most of our schools. And finally, we need to expand opportunities for work-based learning. And again, this makes a lot of sense. Many of our most prestigious professions are trained through work-based learning, like surgeons. The way you become a surgeon is you don't sit around all day taking multiple choice tests. You're actually in the operating room learning how to operate at the hands of a master surgeon. That's how surgeons are trained. A friend of mine does that at Mass General Hospital. That's work-based learning. It really does do the job. So again, we have some great examples of how this is done, and some of them are here in Wisconsin. Project Lead the Way, I'm going to be speaking at their conference in Milwaukee in early December. They're going to have their meeting here in Wisconsin. That's one of the best programs for introducing kids to engineering. In Massachusetts, we have a system of regional vocational technical high schools. And the way that works is, so these are full-time high schools. The students have 1 week in academic, 1 week in vocational, and that's how it's set up. So you come up with a solid grasp of both academics and vocational. Now you might think, boy, that's a recipe for disaster on the academic side. Actually, the graduation rate at those high schools is higher than it is at the comprehensive high schools. And believe it or not, their scores in the MCAS exam, which is the academic exam you have to pass to graduate from high school, is also higher. Oklahoma has got some technology centers, and we can discuss this more in the Q&A if you're interested, but Oklahoma decided they wanted to have the best system of career training in the U.S. They went around the country. They created these technology centers, which are funded by a property tax, and they're providing really high-quality training to young people to prepare them for the jobs right in that area. For example, in Tulsa, where I was last week, they're training young people on how to work on heavy truck maintenance. Why? Because Tulsa is a major transportation center. They're training them on how to break down a diesel engine, for example. Those kids are going out and getting jobs starting at about $40,000 a year. It's a great example of what can be done. So very quickly, on the role of employers, we think that we need to partner with them to solve this problem. They can help talk to our kids about what the career opportunities are because the schools themselves don't have all that information. they can also provide opportunities for work-based learning. And here in Wisconsin, we have a great example of how this can be done, the Wisconsin Youth Apprenticeship Program. It's been around now for almost two decades. There's been lots of research done at the University of Wisconsin. Al Phelps has studied this for a long time. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the program. It has a proven track record. The problem is there's not enough kids involved in it. It could really be scaled up. But look at what's happening with those program, with that program. Almost all the kids are graduating from high school. Most of them are going on to post-secondary education. The employers are wildly enthusiastic about it. It's a very successful model of what can be done, and it's giving students up to 900 hours of exposure to the real world while they're still in high school. So finally, I'd like to close with just a few questions about the implications for Wisconsin. If you really want to address this, and what we're talking about here is the marriage between education policy on the one hand and economic development on the other. I think if we're going to address the problem, the jobs problem, the economic problem, this is what we've got to focus on. So you start out by asking, what's the pathways challenge here in Wisconsin? Who are the young people we aren't preparing? Then you go to the question Jonas asked, what's the mismatch between education and emerging employment opportunities? And let's get real about what the jobs are in Wisconsin. Where is the growth going to occur here? Where is the need here? Let's break this down by region, because the economy in Milwaukee is different than it is in northern Wisconsin. And then let's ask, how can we build a pathways movement here in Wisconsin? So thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward to your questions. On time?
Yeah, 15 more seconds.
Oh, okay.
Any questions for Mr. Simons? As usual, I'll give priority to state legislators and secretaries' offices. Yes.
And if you could tell me who you are, I'd appreciate that, too.
I'm Roger Rivard from Rice Lake, Wisconsin, 75th Assembly District Assemblyman. Have you studied, or do you have any idea of the impact of, and I know youth unemployment is extremely a big problem. I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family business and started working when I was 8, 9 years old, helping around the place. And got a, by the time I was 19 years old, I had a business. I have an 18-year-old grandson that's in college right now that has no idea why he's there, except that his mother told him he had to go. And now we're taking kids at 16, 17, 15, 16, and we're telling them you can't work, you know, until you're X number of years old. And then we're saying you've got to pay them a minimum wage when they really have no skills to start with. Do you think there's been an impact on youth unemployment there because we're not allowing them to work until they get older, and then we're expecting the employers to pay them a huge amount of money when they really don't have any skills, or maybe there should be an entry-level wage?
Right. Well, I think you've raised a really important issue. First of all, though, I think your personal story illustrates what I'm talking about. You really went through what amounts to an apprenticeship program, right? There was a family business. I'm sure your father didn't say, you know, you have to wait till you're 18. We introduced you to this business. It started at a really early age. And the result is that you were well qualified to move ahead. Today, we're not giving many of our young people the opportunity to get that kind of experience. And I think we have to change. We have to realize that that's a critical part of the transition to adulthood. So it's not just going to school. You really do need the work experience. You need to learn, why is it so important to show up on time? How do you react to customers and fellow employees? You're not going to learn those kinds of things out of a textbook. You just aren't. You've got to get the real-world experience. We need to offer them the opportunities. Now, as far as the salary goes, you know, apprenticeship and internship programs and that kind of thing are often structured so the wage is not equivalent to a minimum wage. So I think if you're getting education experience along with it, then that's really the more important factor. Do you want to call in the people?
Yes,
Okay.
I'm Representative Gordon Hintz from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. How much, you know, we've all been kind of struggling with this, and the previous speaker mentioned that, you know, we expect manufacturing growth to return. I'm looking at an article from about a month ago that kind of talked about our skilled labor mismatch that we have, and that we have a number of our 30,000 open jobs are in manufacturing, and both employers and some of the employee advocates suggested that, you know, with wages being declined and, you know, pushed down and, you know, no loyalty or career, you know, that people aren't getting the skills that they are, you know, needed. So how do we deal with the fact that, you know, wages are being cut, temporary workers are being used, and a lot of our, you know, the first sign of a bad economy, there's going to be layoffs. People aren't going to want to go to vocational education if they don't feel like there's any certainty or career or loyalty. I mean, I think a lot of our employment opportunities that were there because there was a stable career, you know, aren't there as much anymore. So I mean, I feel like we kind of have, you know, a number of factors in there that may impact why someone chooses to get the skill set they need.
Right. Well, Jonas in his presentation talked about the 3 million jobs that employers are having trouble filling. Those are jobs usually that require quite demanding technical skills, and by the way, that pay a lot more than what the average person is making. The problem is they can't find the workers with the right skill set. Today's manufacturing is a lot more demanding than what manufacturing used to be. They're expecting a lot more from the employers. We have a couple of problems. One is an image problem. Many parents think, well, I don't want my son or daughter to go into manufacturing because that's dirty and dangerous. That's not the reality of manufacturing in the U.S. today, but that's the image they have. So the kids often never even go down that road. They never even explore it. Essentially, they're shutting off an option that would really be productive. And I saw this graphically out in Seattle. There's been a lot of interest in the Pathways work out there. We've been working with Boeing. Now, Boeing has what are probably some of the best manufacturing jobs in the U.S., but they have a pipeline problem because many of their workers are going to be retiring. They don't have the young people to replace them. Why is that? One reason is that in Seattle Public Schools, they've actually cut back on shop class. They said, you know, it's the 21st century. We don't need that anymore. Well, if you're not exposing kids to working with metal, the odds they're going to grow up and actually build jet airplanes are virtually zero. You've got to get some of that experience. So we're not equipping them with the right skills. And just sitting in school with a strictly academic curriculum is not going to expose them to what they, you know, to some of the skills they need to work at a place like Boeing.
One more quick question.
I am a representative. I'm Representative Kathy Brunier. I'm from the 68th Assembly District, Eau Claire area. You know, I've noticed this when I was a young mother. I took my kids on a field trip to Falls Dairy so they could see how cheese was made. And I took them to, believe it or not, the Linenkugel Brewery so they could see how beer was made. So I think, you know, I've heard educators say our children are less concerned with work environment. They're more concerned with the quality of life and nature and that sort of thing. I would encourage our kids at a very young age to, their field trips are great to the zoo and to the park and that sort of thing, but I think we really should encourage our kids to take our field trips to a manufacturing site or a work site so they can see how things are made, and we got to start them very young to think about what they want to do when they grow up.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree more. And by the way, just because you're thinking about that doesn't mean you can't change your mind. We're not locking anybody into anything, but if they have no direction at all, the chances they're going to get there are pretty low. They've got to come up with some direction, figure out how they're going to make it. And certainly in this economy, finding your slot in the economy where you can be productive and successful is an increasingly urgent question for many young people and their parents across Wisconsin. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill.